You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flueckiger, only on LA Talk Radio.
All right, welcome to the show tonight. Your Ultimate Life, Your Ultimate Life. Creating a life of purpose, prosperity, and joy. And we have all kinds of fun guests on here. And tonight is no exception. Got somebody that's going to blow your mind, Ori Bengal, The Art of Ori. And if you don't go check out his site, theartofori.com, you're nuts. A tiny sampling is, behind him on the screen. Ori, welcome to the show.
Hey, how's it going?
Glad to have you. And, you know, the whole show is about helping people realize that they have power to create their own lives. They have power to do what they want and create what they want and not sort of live in the shadow of, you know, the rules and things like that. And you're a perfect example of that. So without going into detail on each one, why is the background, besides showing off your coolness, what is important about the collage of paintings behind you there?
Oh, they're so colorful. It just reminds people that clowns can vomit as well. No, each one is a story. I mean, I can tell you not only like what the painting is, but also who it's of, why it's significant. Each one is, kind of realized this is a very intimate process. I do a lot of research. I really get to know the people. My unofficial slogan is I make grown-ups cry. Unofficial because obviously it could get taken out of context. I yanked their nostril hairs. No, it's because the art is I'm really good at surprising people. I overpromise and overdeliver, and you know they say, "Oh, underpromise and overdeliver." I tell them I'm good, but then they, even if they've seen the previews, like to sign off on what the comps look like or something. But you're talking about these ones specifically. This is my older brother. We grew up on sci-fi, and the person that he's having brunch with in a sci-fi environment is Isaac Asimov, who we again in the sci-fi theme. This is Molly. She actually works at a hologram company. I met her at an actual rocket launch, watching my art go into space. My art is on the moon, so it's truly and literally out of this world. And I met her at the launch. She asked me, we didn't talk the entire time. I didn't get to know her until she was about to leave, and she just approached me and said, excuse me, can you help me? I said, absolutely. And she said, but you don't even know what I need help with. I'm like, do you want help? And she said, yeah. So she took me outside and showed me that her car was blocked in and explained she's got an early morning meeting and she's got no idea how to find who's got the car because the party's going in loud. And I walked in, I turned off the Bluetooth speaker, and I just went until all 60 people just kind of quieted and looked at me. I said, hey, guys, sorry to interrupt. I just thought that the person with the red Tesla and the person with the white Kia Carnival wanted to know that your cars are being towed, but you might be able to beat the guy. Whatever. Anyways, enjoy the party. I went outside. They ran out there in a hurry. And so obviously Molly and I became friends, and I found out that not only does she work at a hologram company, but it is actually her dream. Everything she's ever done and will ever do is to move forward in creating the technology, like in Star Wars, which inspired her, Obi-Wan Kenobi, like the little palm-sized actual glowing hologram. So I surprised her with a painting of her, and I also made an actual hologram for their equipment when she sent me the specs. But each person's I'll get used to this reverse camera things, one of these moments. Each person's thing is their specific story. This one's for an album. The one above me is for an album cover. Now I'm on the lower rule of thirds, by the way. I'm still on the rule of thirds, just not the one you mentioned. Is an album cover about a relationship that, you know, she lifted him up and then, you know, towards the end kind of brought him down. The one on the left, the one in the pink dress, there's actually about 17 items that are about her. And we did the unveiling. She had no clue what I was bringing, and we had an audience there. It was at a TEDx conference, and she's a certified NASCAR driver. Her favorite number is 35, loves the stars and the moon. She's an author, she's a radio personality, she's a club DJ, she's spoken to TEDx before, she's flown planes that particular make and model before. Favorite place is Philadelphia, hence the love thing. That's one of the landmarks from there. Tower of Eiffel, someday she wants to go there. She's definitely got a thing for, there's a bunch more things in there, but you get the idea. So I try to find out everything that I can and squeeze in. Like, it doesn't have to be a ton of things, but it just has to be what's going to be extremely significant for the person. So a lot of my stuff becomes lifelong prized possessions.
So, you know, I love it. And one of the questions I ask everybody all the time is about adding good to the world, because you know me well enough to know that we're built to love and serve each other. And so one thing that you've said is that significant research, knowing that your brother loves science fiction and having a robot and Isaac Asimov in the picture, and then and the number of things that the lady in the pink dress had and the others as well. The depth of emotion, like what makes us human and what makes us deeply human, is our ability to connect and feel and have those shared experiences with each other. And that's the reason we, you know, love and service touches us so deeply, even more deeply than anything else. So something I know about you is when you do this research and put all the things that you do, for example, in that woman's picture for her, and she didn't know that was coming. When someone is exposed in an instant to the love, I'm just going to call it the love that you put in the picture, the research and the care and all of that, when they're exposed to that all of a sudden, what happens?
Quite often tears. Let me ask while we're still early in the show, probably shouldn't curse on the air, right?
I don't in my show. I don't think Sam cares, but I don't.
All right. I'll just, you know, you're a classy guy. I deal in all circles, but, there's a fantastic one where, one of my mentors, I was speaking on stage at a conference of his, and I brought a painting for him, but I put it in a box, like a large box, to add mystery. I'm all about experience. Like, I do the fancy schmancy unveilings and I say voila or whatever. I just did a painting for David Copperfield. I tried to get him to, I was like, how often are you going to be in the, you know, to have the opportunity to be literally in the room with the world's foremost expert on making, going voila and making things appear and disappear. So anyways, but this mentor, I brought this box, it was gift wrapped with large ribbon and stuff, but it was, you know, I cut it so it will open quickly because we're on stage and the event is running late as it was. So he didn't even want to be on stage. He was kind of grumpy because everything's, but my friend was assisting him. So kind of pushed him on stage and comes out. I'm like, here, I got you something. And he opens it and you can see it in my reactions video. As soon as he opens it and sees it, you hear his voice just break. And he's like, oh damn, That's awesome. And he starts crying. And he says, and that's why I asked beforehand about language. Call me a-hole. And, you know, throws some of the packaging. Because I just made him cry in front of 400, 500 people. You know, you and the image was him with Willie Nelson. I made it look kind of like a magazine cover photo shoot, both of them holding their guitars. He loves country music. He's a huge fan of Willie Nelson's, and I don't know, probably about 10 years ago at a barbecue, I remember overhearing him say that, you know, someday he's gonna, you know, be able to hire Willie Nelson to play his birthday party. And that one little comment was enough to, you know, so it didn't have to be 17 different things or 23 different things like David Copperfield's painting. It was just him. But it's okay. I almost started an agency to do custom vision boards. I thought maybe that's not necessarily the way my brain works. I might get bored if I just did the same thing all the time. But I ran an experiment. You know, you obviously you deal in hopes, dreams, futures. You got your PTAC, so you know what a vision board is. So most people, they'll, you know, go online or cut out magazines. If everyone, anyone here remembers like actual paper things, you know, you cut out the pictures and you'd put them on your cork board or poster board and you hang in. So you're supposed to see your dreams. So if you're, you know, you got a dream house that you saw in a magazine, you're looking at it and you're reminded, if you're maybe slightly overweight or morbidly overweight, whichever, and you'd like to get six pack abs, there's that picture of that dude with the six pack abs. So instead of having a generic vision board, which is just taking these images, what I did, kind of like you see Tia over here, you know, driving a NASCAR. She actually does drive a NASCAR thing, but you know, here, perfect example, right? This is Molly's actual hopes and dreams. She got to see, so instead of seeing like a generic, you know, cut out of some dude from a magazine, I can show you Kellen with the actual six pack, right? And man, I did one or two of me just, no, let's just see, you know, just so I can have an example so I can put it on the website. And I made the thing and I looked and I was like, wow, like it's got an effect when having a generic thing to hope for and you're like, yeah, that's cool, that's what I look like. But when you actually see your hope and dream realized, it's got an impact. I did not expect that it was going to be like, I was like, oh, I'll just throw this together. And so apparently now I need to remember also to get my pilot's license because that's what that picture was of. But I haven't made time for that yet.
But, so
yeah,
I have
answer your question.
Yeah, no, you did.
A lot of times it's tears.
Tears. So I want to ask you a question. One way to think about the expression of your gift is you move people. Tears is a marker. The guy that was on stage, so I'm Willie Nelson, and you know the others, and I'm familiar with some of your work, so I've seen your book, and that we'll talk about where people can see that later. But I want to dig into your heart, because we talk. The most important thing is, you know, purpose, prosperity, and joy. I want people to be happy with their lives, joy-filled, not just doing something that they know how to do, and maybe they know how to do better than anybody in the world, but there's a reason we do stuff. So you could make awesome paintings for people and, you know, do commissions and sell things, but you have a different driver. And I want to know, in your heart, what is important to you and makes it important for you to continuously develop your talent, do something good with it that matters and that makes a difference. So talk about your drivers, both for becoming excellent and what makes you want to do things so good people react emotionally and are touched at that deepest level.
Well, most of my drivers these days are on Uber, but sometimes I'll use Lyft. No, obviously, okay. Humor is one that I've literally made someone just crack up laughing at their 16-year-old daughter's memorial. Like, I mean, there's, you know, and they appreciate it. It wasn't one of those, like, inappropriate ones. Everyone else, but that's another thing. Humor, we all actually have, you look at Maslow's hierarchy, or more, Maslow's hierarchy is supposed to basically, okay, food, shelter, you know, mate, society, whatever. And then once you've got all those things, then self-actualization. So we have self-actualization. If you study, and I think that Stephen Kotler is the best author for this, the book I highly, highly recommend for anyone, especially since you're talking about, you know, following dreams, doing what moves you, how to figure out what even moves you in there. The book is The Art of Impossible, and not The Art of Worry, The Art of Impossible. And Stephen writes, so there's flow triggers. One of them is autonomy, right? That's like why a lot of people will work a lot harder than at their job just to have their own business, even if it basically is their own job, just because now at least they're in charge of it. Another one is mastery. We actually have a genetic, like in our genes, we have a driver to pursue mastery. We get, so flow state, for anyone who's not familiar with it by name, perhaps, but you've definitely experienced it. It's when you're doing something and, I don't know, maybe you're just having so much fun or you just get stuck in it. You don't notice the time going by. Like maybe you missed dinner or a call or whatever, because you just were just doing your thing. And the reason that is, it brings up basically all, it's the only time that we have all of the neurotransmitters firing at once. It's actually an addictive state, but not dangerous like with, you know, drugs and such, because A, it's it's internal. It's the body created it. Second of all, the flow triggers are all things that are difficult. They're all things that are like creating positive habits. For example, one of the things is you have to do things that are more difficult than your current level. Say between, you know, 3 to 4% is like pretty standard. So not like so difficult, you're like, oh, I can't do this. This sucks. I'm never trying this again kind of thing. I don't recommend just showing up to a marathon without training for 4 months and you know, you'll get injured and you'll never want to do it again. But, you know, if you're bench pressing 95 and you go and you try like 115, that's great. You know, it might be difficult, but you improve by doing that. So that's some of my drivers right there. I'm creatives and extreme athletes are very much discussed in these books. And it's very interesting because they do get addicted, right? And so you have these people who are not the product of nurture versus nature. So you have people from broken homes, and yet they're breaking world records and they keep innovating. This is how you get innovation, not like growing incrementally, but growing exponentially. And so, yeah, I'm not necessarily like trying, but every single time I make a new work of art, it better be the best thing I've ever done. And it's in tight. But that was on the mastery front. You were also asking about the kindness, and I had to tell you, man, I came from Israel. And I didn't know English, and kids were mean, and my parents had a fast food place, so I was a little fat kid because, you know, my own doing. No one knew about childhood obesity. I might have started that. But darn trendsetter. I was always a visionary, you know, ahead of my time. No, but yeah, fast food place. Hey, Ori, we're coming home. Do you need anything from the store? Oh, yeah, give me a 12-inch cheesesteaks, no veggies, extra mayonnaise, triple cheese, double meat, cheese fries, you know, all that, right? So, but I was always drawn to art. And, but yeah, I was always an outsider. And then in 2006, I actually gave away my stuff, went on a road trip completely based on whose couch I'm crashing on next at a blog, couchsurfingori.com. I stayed with UFC cage fighters, the CEO of Zappos, New York Times bestselling authors, roller derby players, and everyone in between. And so many people basically took me in. I was basically homeless for professionally. You know, I was a blogger, but I was professionally homeless for 6 years. And, you know, people put me up. A lot of times people gave me food. People gave me audiobooks and stuff. That absolutely helped. And so for one thing, I want to pay it forward. But the other thing is it's just – inspiration, I don't know, divine guidance, call it that. I you know, choose your thing. I was always doing art. I didn't even know I was an artist until I was 35. It's a whole other story. But when I did realize, I started doing art every single day. I did for over 4,000 days in a row, consecutive, no matter what. And I was also being strategic about it. So I'd gift some art to some influencers and stuff. And one of them, when I ran into him at another event, was like, hey, Ori, my buddy Alice Cooper is doing this charity event. Would you like to donate a piece to that? And sure. Now, here's the thing, Kellen, I had a lot of fun making that piece. And I had even more fun delivering that piece. There's this picture, I know you've seen it, me on stage with Alice Cooper. I always joke around, no, Alice Cooper isn't my dad. You know, it just kind of looks like, yeah, we look related. And there's me and him and this giant painting. It's so epic. But none of that stuff matters. Yeah, you know, I'm going to get right back to that in a second. What happened was when I did that, that painting was my first five-figure painting. It sold for $10,000 for a good cause, and that blew my mind, because up until that point, the most I've ever donated to anything was $500, and that $500 really stretched me. I did that as a gift to someone else's birthday. I knew it would be meaningful for them. And so it was a cause that, you know, really affected their life and all that stuff. So, and it was worth it being stretching myself. Prior to that, I don't know, maybe 100 something, 200 something. And all of a sudden you go from that, like low three figures to five figures. And you're like, it changed what's possible. And funny enough, and also in the study of flow state and all that stuff, there's all these different kinds of highs, right? That, you know, you get like endorphins, runner's high, right? You get the pump after you're working out. Well, all of those, like flow generally lasts X number of hours, 14 hours or something like that. But there's one kind that actually lasts up to 3 days, and that's a giver's high. I didn't know. I haven't read this book. Wasn't even out in 2019 when I did that. But the concept that I could do what I do for fun, for mastery, for work, like this is what I do, what I am. You know, creativity and all that stuff. And I could use that and I could change a bunch of people's lives. That it just blew my mind. And so I said, get back to the thing. None of that mattered. So that was what mattered. The next day, once I got that photo of me and Alice, I loved that photo. I still love that photo. But I made my profile picture on Facebook. And people started sharing my profile picture. That's something that never really happened before. And they start saying like, oh, I know this guy, or I went to high school with this guy. And you'd think that you'd be happy about people bragging about knowing you, but that wasn't the case. It was, hey, I don't really care about any people from high school. Like I said, I was an outsider and all that stuff. Like, oh, but it was more of like, oh, the 70,000 hours of hard work and all that stuff no one cared about, but you're on stage with a celebrity. Whoa, well, hey, this guy's cool, And it tells you something about the culture. So I go, okay, that's the way the game is played. And I've done things for Alice Cooper, Scott Page from Pink Floyd, Toto and Supertramp, William Shatner, David Copperfield, and I did a NFT series for Snoop Dogg, and there's a bunch of others. I mean, I didn't come here to name drop boy, but it was that it's a thing. But the thing that I cared about, the thing that moved me, was that I was able to actually like do something I didn't know it was possible for me to help people, so I guess I didn't try. My journey kind of, a lot about my journey. So I will say that life beat a lot of humility into me. I used to be pretty entitled and just expect people to do things or whatever. I'll give people the shirt off my back. If anyone needs something, no problem. But, I'm also not worried about asking. And some people think that's like entitlement. I didn't really have struggle, but I did have struggle. It's really difficult to follow your dream, especially when it's like creativity. Take for example someone who's growing up in a house where jazz is not encouraged, but they really love jazz and want to do it. It's that. I'm talking about Kellen, by the way, if you guys didn't know that. His family was against jazz, and obviously if you go on Spotify and you listen to Kellen's music, he's got, well, every genre, more than anyone. I think maybe that's why we get along, Kellen, because I got like every genre of art and you got every genre of music, but it's all creativity, right? But being a creative as well as being an entrepreneur is one of the most lonely places to be, because we think differently. It's not me like trying to say, ooh, I'm special. You have conversations with people that just, what you're telling them, I'm going to do this, they don't understand that. I tell my parents, okay, I'm going to make this painting, I'm going to donate to this cause, and they're, we're going to make the limited edition prints as well, so because they're leaving money on the table. My dad's like, wait, so how much are they paying you? I'm like, well, I'm donating. And my dad just looks at me like my, even many years into this, even after I've had a bunch of successes, even after my parents begged me for this one painting I made of them, and dad tried to find ways to ask for it without backtracking all the things, like, if you send us this picture, me and your mom can send you a picture of me and her, standing and kissing behind the painting, just like we are in the painting. Same dude still telling me, kind of these days, that I'd make more money or have more stability. Like, why don't I just get a job at McDonald's or something? Or, Best Buy, I'm good with computers. Dude, that hurts. Like, if you haven't gotten it by now, I would be dead and homeless under a freaking bridge before I stop doing this. This is everything. Now,
I'm going to stop you there. I'm going to ask a question.
Yeah.
I'm going to stick something in here, and that's this. So you and I have talked before and many different times about a fellow who writes books named Stephen Pressfield, who writes a book books about the artist's journey and the war of art and turning pro. And he basically outlines the process of deciding you're going to be a real life as a creative. And he's talking about writing, but he also applies it to all creatives. And you've told pieces of a very interesting and powerful story. You started with, you know, couch surfing for some time, and you decided you were going to be an artist because of some events that took place in your life. And now what you're describing is something that nearly every artist, and in many cases, every entrepreneur goes through.
Yeah.
Because people, by and large, think you should get a job. In other words, you should fit into the box of work for some outfit that is already organized, so you don't have to worry, and you can have a paycheck, and you can pay for normal things and be normal. Entrepreneurs reject that, and as you observed earlier, maybe they're working twice as hard, but they get the joy of self-determination. As an artist,
I work 18 hours a day so I can make money in my sleep was the quote, you know.
Exactly right. And so you, as an artist and an entrepreneur, you have explored, you know, you've driven into your soul to make art that touches people deeply. You're driven to know and how to use the latest and greatest techniques and tools that allow you to create art that's different than anyone else's. And I just want to add here, I own several pieces of Ori's art, and they're gorgeous. They're one of a kind, and I wouldn't trade them for anything. And he talked about, you know, the emotion associated with that. I have experienced that. I have opened the box and opened the painting and then felt that expression of truth that comes out of the picture. And at the same time, another feeling, which is an expression of feeling of gratitude, which for me also brings emotion toward Ori, because the evidence of his dedication and commitment is so clear in the creation. So that's just a little bit of things that you've talked about. But the point I wanted to make is the entrepreneur goes off the reservation to create a thing for their own vision. The artist goes off the reservation, whether it's music, art, dance, doesn't matter, to create that thing that is in their heart, that is the muse, the driver, the thing that makes them, you know, sleep on the floor and eat dog food for however long, because they're trying to create a thing. I laugh on that because there was a time in my life I loved piano and play and been a musician forever. And I didn't buy a bed, and I lived in a tiny little place, and I did sleep on the floor and eat ramen noodles. Why? So I could buy a piano. So I get the same thing. But anyway, I want you to just think about that. You said, I would die under a bridge before I fit into the box.
Before I'd stop doing this.
Well, that's what I meant. Before you fit into it. Use the phrase fit into the box. Stop doing the dream, the desire, the power of your heart, which you have. So I want you to comment for a minute. What would you say? Because people who watch this show, they're coaches, they're entrepreneurs, they're people who want it, they're wannapreneurs, and you know, they want this, and maybe they've seen things like movies that talk about it, or read Pressfield's books or whatever. You are living embodiment of this truth. So what would you say to someone who's saying, oh, I wish I could fill in the blank? What would you say to them?
For my eyes, kind of started watering up just as soon as just hearing that, that I wish I could, because I've been there. I know what that is. So first of all, don't wish, do it. You don't have to tell other people that you're doing it. In fact, you know, like it's well-meaning people, right? That well-meaning friends and family that are often like the killers and murderers of dreams. So protect your dreams. You know, get good, study it, do it on your own time. Find ways to do it. It's 2024 at the time we're recording this thing right now, and there's never been a time where it is. When I was getting started as an artist, we had to walk uphill both ways. And I had to get my tutorial videos on VHS tapes, which are kind of like audio cassette. Oh, never mind. But you know, it's better than vinyl. No, you had to like scour. You had to look. You had to go to libraries. By the way, here's another thing. I had to learn this lesson. I'm not a great reader. Sure, I'm very literate. I've read plenty of books, but apparently I haven't been officially tested, but every single person who's ever met me is like, you're the poster child for ADHD, right? I mean, I'm multitasking. I learned that books were not my modality. Once I discovered audiobooks, my life changed. And now you've got Audible. Now you've got YouTube. Now your public library, by the way, will give you audiobooks and videos. You've got Udemy and Coursera. Wait, Coursera is actually, I think, one of the platforms for hosting. But you've got Udemy. You've got all these just nonstop, as far as the eye can see, people just giving away the content because they're getting paid. It's the creator economy. So you can get the information. There is no excuse for that. And I will tell you that the pain and regret of not doing the thing that you wish, not expressing the thing that's within you, it can literally kill you. It can cause cancer and sickness and all that stuff. My dad keeps asking me, like, why don't you, you know, go back to making websites? You were making, I said, because I don't like the thought of suicide. That's literally the answer I give him every time. And I'm not saying that in jest. That's literally why I tell him. There's always this, like, looking back, there's this, like, cloud of kind of suffering when I had to, you know, like you'd say like, oh, I want to go outside and play. No, like this is, it's you're denying who you are, right? My older brother's gay. When he came out, right, we all, you know, I support him. Now he lives a much happier life, right? It's when we wear masks and we pretend we're not who we actually are, it is literally killing you. Like, you can go and study your blood under a microscope and you will see like the biological markers. It's dangerous. And the fact is, like, so yeah, figure out, first of all, take the time to figure out what is it that you wish you could do. Like, what does that actually look like? What is, like, oh, I want to play the saxophone. Well, what does that look like? Like, what kind of songs would you be? What kind of music would you be? I probably say that because I just did a painting for my niece. I asked my brother, like, what does she want to be when she grows up? It's a thing I do every birthday or two. And then I paint and she gets to see herself as that. So I you'd be like, well, what does that look like? Well, you know, well, I would be playing like this kind of music and I get paid for it. You know, sometimes you don't. There's another distinction. You don't have to get paid to do the thing. You can still have that day job. There's plenty of people that have a day job. In fact, Tim Ferriss and Stephen Kotler, quoting Tim Ferriss, will tell you, like, so get the 4-hour work week. Don't necessarily take it as gospel. It's already been proven that Tim Ferriss does not work 4 hours at all. It's more about conveying the concept that you're delegating and outsourcing. And but Tim Ferriss is the master, like, I would say probably the world's greatest, other than maybe like a savant or two, because that's all different than the thing, but at learning skills, like, and it's spectacular. Go read his blogs, etc. But so yeah, sure. But so talks about what Tim Ferriss tells you: if you're starting a business, start your business as a side hustle. Don't go quitting your job and leave your relationship and all that stuff and go, okay, I'm gonna start, you know, nanotechnology company. Like, that is, that's dangerous as well, because you're going to run out of resources. Do you have the skills to be professionally homeless for 6 years and, you know, mm-hmm. like, and live mm-hmm. under a bridge? Like, and, you know, are you able, if you are, great, you know, but yeah, eating, paying the bills, like that stuff's great too. Don't get me wrong. Stability is wonderful. But it don't, in fact, it's also been proven in a lot of psychological books and studies that when people take what they love and you introduce and you start paying them a reward for it, all of a sudden, a lot of times it detracts from their love, because the motivator was love. The motivator was passion. The motivator was that this is just what they want. That's, you mentioned that, oh, through whatever reasons, you know, I discovered that I'm an artist. So to let people know the bullet point version of that, I can do such a thing. Someone told me in 2001, I'd do an art show. It didn't go my way and no one showed up and I didn't sell anything. So I'm like, oh, guess I'm not an artist. Stopped making art for 10 years. 10 years later, I went into a gallery, another gallery, and I just felt crushed because I realized that the thing that was always my thing, I was always buying art supplies and art books. Told you, not a book person, so I never actually read them. But I'd flip through the pictures and go, I want to do that. And it is just, I felt that pain. That's when I realized I'm an artist. It was all, you don't hear too many people telling their kids, like, oh, go be an artist. You'll make a lot of money. You're, go be a doctor. Go be a this. Go be that. And you hear of a lot of doctors that are dying of depression, suicide, yeah. dentists, all that stuff. There's, do what you are here for. Like I do recommend, again, the 4-hour work week, the Art of the Impossible, really everything by Stephen Kotler I find inspiring. Stephen Pressfield's The War of Art instead of The Art of War. It's a very playful thing. Brilliant. I listen to that book probably once a year. It's a short book. Great narrator, by the way. Funny story. I listened to his next book and I'm like, man, this narrator is not nearly as good. And I'm like, oh crap, narrated by the author. So, I listened to the War of Art so many times. I just associated that with Pressfield's voice, even though it wasn't. That I think is his best book by far. The rest of them just kind of repeat what he says, but start with those. First of all, go listen to some like personal development stuff. I'm not telling you to go be a personal junkie. I'm not telling you to spend hundreds or thousands or anything on conferences. You don't have to go to Tony Robbins and all that stuff, but like go listen to some of the classics. Find them on YouTube for free. Zig Ziglar, Jim Rohn, like just some stuff that will help you believe in yourself. It makes a difference. Find community. If there's you want to play the saxophone, go find other people that want to play the saxophone, or even better, you know, I go find mentors. Coincidentally, you can't even spell mentoring without Ori. I was doing photography, and at the time, I had a day job. I was running a print shop at the world's largest online community for models and photographers. And so what I did, whenever I made a business card for a photographer whose portfolio, I was, you know, they picked the template. I'm like, I'll take this one or this one. And I would go to, I'm supposed to take just their cover photo, put it on the business card and send them the proof. Here it is. But so I had to go to all their portfolios each time. So whenever I would do one for a photographer whose work I saw was spectacular, I'd go through their portfolio. I would actually not necessarily use their profile picture. I would use the ones that I thought were the best. In fact, oftentimes I broke the templates. I'm like, look, I made you this and this and this. And they're like, whoa, that does look way better. Thank you. I go, great. Thank you. I'm glad you like it. Dude, your work's really inspiring. That's why I did that. I'd really appreciate it if, you know, you could take a quick second look at my portfolio. Let me know what you think. Maybe give me a little feedback. Now, all of a sudden, almost instantly, my my work improved in massive ways, because here's guys who've been doing this so much longer than me. They've already made the mistakes, and they're like, they can see it. When I look at a website, you know, we've been talking about this recently about another topic, but when I look at a website, when I look at a painting, when I look at anything that I've got, like, you have that master's eye, right? And so the stuff is just glaringly obvious. I did a painting for a foundation just other week for to help foster kids. Man, there's people who have like statistics against them. And so they were having the event. It was a golf tournament.
I need to stop you because I got to get, I love the stories and we could fill up.
Yeah.
We have about 4.5 minutes left. And what I want to make sure we do is I want you to say the thing you're doing right now with charities. And then I want you to tell people how to find you and get a hold of you, because I have to get that in here so that there's value and opportunity. So I'm going to stop that story. Tell us what you're doing now with charities and how to find you. And you've got 4 minutes.
You got, last month I went to a charity gala, and it reminded me that epiphany that I had when I did the Alice Cooper thing, that I not only can impact a lot of lives, but that I need to, that this is like my calling. So I reached out to a bunch of my people, and anyone who's listening to this, I have not just the ability to make art that makes people cry, laugh, you know, just lose their stuff, you know, like an emotional response, and these things become people's prized possessions. And all of these images that you're seeing here are much larger than the screen. The one I just did for that gala was 40 by 70. I can do them even larger, but it's not just making the art. I research the cause, I research a foundation, I research an event, I create something that's going to convert higher. I have a background in, because of all my travels and everything else, in marketing. I do a lot of consulting to help people get bigger results. And so a lot of foundations are leaving money on the table, and it's really sad, because so you auction off the big painting, but that's great. But you know what? There's hundreds of people, thousands of people that are at the event that couldn't spend $100,000 or whatever. But you know what? They can pay a couple $100 for a limited edition print, and they still have now something to remember the thing. You take 1,000 people, $100, that's $100,000 that aren't going to get otherwise. And now they have something to remember the event by. There's other things as well that I do, like live painting at the event. So now you've got an additional piece. Now with AI, I can actually put people into the painting in real time. You know, whoever's donating the most, all of a sudden they get added in. So there's a lot of stuff to blow people's minds. There's a lot of ways. So basically, now my primary focus is to use my skills for good, use my gifts to make a positive impact. And so I'm just looking for any foundations, good causes, preferably larger ones, because larger impact, and it's the word out there, etc. Yeah, so I want to help. My email, theartofori.com. My Facebook, my personal one, is ori.bengal, O-R-I-B-E-N-G-A-L. That's probably social media I'm under a lot. LinkedIn, Ori Bengal. I haven't been using my social media as much as I should, because I'm just so busy making the art that, you know, I'm improving on it. You can WhatsApp me, 305-528-5583. If you've got a great cause, something that will actually make a difference, let's talk. I might not be, you know what, maybe it's not art, but I can probably, just like Kellen, will take you know, like a 60-minute call. Let's talk. Let's see if we're compatible. But I can still help you. You certainly helped me, by the way, in the year and a half we've been together. And yeah, I mean, there's a million ways I can help you. So
and that's what I wanted. I just wanted to make sure that, and I wanted to add a piece here at the end from my own experience. Ori's the best artist I've ever personally been acquainted with. Now, I didn't know Picasso and a bunch of dead guys that have art wherever. But in today, in this world, with the tools that are there, there's several layers to this, and I'm going to take a minute to say it. There's the mastery of the skill and the tools. There's the eye and the visual understanding. There's all those things. But the special thing about Ori is his intensity, his devotion, and his willingness to connect with the truth of what he's trying to represent. And I'm not doing this to shill. I would say you'd if you have any need for this sort of thing, you'd really be doing yourself a disservice not to look at that and to take advantage. And I've had the pleasure of being closely associated with him for the last 18 months and have witnessed the things that he's done and how he pours his heart out into his work and in adding good to the world, which is what we're talking about here. Ori, thanks for taking time to share your stories, your art, your heart. And gee, art and heart don't even have Ori in them. But sharing your art and your heart and your love with me and with your audience today. Thank you.
My absolute pleasure. Thank you for having me. It was an honor.
You're welcome. So I want you to listen to this and go back through it and just watch those pictures. They're big. They're beautiful. They're tearjerkers. They made the people who saw them and had them just touch them in deep and powerful ways. And it's unusual. Like, you think about ways you can make a difference. I brought Ori on because he does such good work and has such an ability to impact things in a big way and make you able to live your dreams, make your impact, and create your ultimate life.
You're listening to Your Ultimate Life with Kellen Flukiger, only on LA Talk Radio.